five, four, three, two.
Welcome back in to the Radcast, everybody. Here's a little bonus for you. If you listen to our Season 2 retrospective episode of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers here in Mighty Morphin May, you heard us talk about how we more than likely would re-release our Mighty Morphin Power Rangers the movie review in order to kind of bridge between our Season 2 discussion and Season 3 discussion. And that's what this is right here. It's another re-release of one of our older episodes. I know it's our second in as many weeks. However, this one is in the spirit of the theme of the month of Mighty Morphin May. So hopefully you enjoy it. If you listened to it all those years ago, hopefully this is the first time you've listened to it in a while. And if you're just getting with us with our Mighty Morphin May, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers series, where we've already talked about seasons one and two, and this is your first time hearing it, please enjoy. Again, this was recorded in May, or it was released in May of 2020 in honor of the 25th anniversary of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie. But I won't keep you waiting any longer. Here it is, our review of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie, for Mighty Morphin May.
Speaking of the Page Master.
Speaking of the Page Master, you all have accidentally hit forward on your forward skip on your podcast app, and we are, you have skipped to the Page Master episode.
Yeah, so exactly.
Welcome in and go find the exit.
Yeah.
But before we jump into why Matt said that,
yeah,
real quick, I think it's only appropriate. I say vivid. It's a faint memory of at a Blockbuster on the new release shelf, seeing the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie after skate day at the church we grew up in.
Oh yeah, skate day was just a day in which they'd set up half pipes in the church
parking lot. It
was an outreach event, basically.
For the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a typical 1995, 1996 outreach event.
Yeah.
But I remember being in a Blockbuster after that. And this is, for those of you that have been listening for a while, we've touched on a couple times, anytime we mentioned the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie, we mentioned the movie itself. So 1995 was kind of the start of being conscious and being aware of our surroundings and nostalgia growing for us. So there are things that are hazy revolving around this year and things that are kind of hazy about the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. But all I can tell you is whether it's hazy or it got more and more vivid, there's no understating how important the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers were to us.
Yeah, and we mainly watched it in reruns.
Yeah.
Just in the, you know, as the 90s progressed, like when we were kids.
I think in season three, we would watch them, like, because
that was like 96.
Yeah, and one of these days, because it's so important to us, it was our first obsession. It was our first obsession with anything superhero related.
Yep.
But one of these days, Matt and I are going to be doing, whether it is on a Radcast Roulette or its own podcast or own creative venture or whatever, we are going to be going more in depth on the Power Rangers.
Yeah.
Whether it's season by season or episode by episode, as we figure that out, you will hear more of our thoughts on the Power Rangers on the show and how it was important to us. But I mean, all that being said, whether we watched it in reruns or watched it when it first aired after school in Fox Kids, the Power Rangers was it for us.
Plus, it was the first time you're sort of encouraged to embrace the things you love, even for their like faults or whatever.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is the show for kids, as you get older, it's really corny and lame, and either you kind of, you know, keep it at a distance, or you sort of embrace it for that and sort of recognize it for what it is. And that was sort of my introduction to that mindset. And now there's so many things that I still love, even though they're not great.
Yeah.
But there's a charm to this movie for sure.
Oh yeah. And I think without recognition of knowing something isn't like of super high quality.
Yeah.
I kind of, you know, not detest, but I kind of like, I don't really like the rose colored glasses approach to something, but if you can recognize that something has its faults, but still love it, I say, if your glasses have a little rosy tint to them, it doesn't matter. Cause I don't deter people from this thing unless they like hurting people or themselves. Don't deter them from stuff that they like. And this is something that we love.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and this movie was a theatrical release. It had a pretty good budget on it.
Oh yeah.
It gave you some early doses of CGI.
Mm-hmm.
They shot on location in Australia. Mm-hmm. There's some pretty awesome stunts.
Yeah.
Some pretty impressive stunts, some pretty impressive scenery,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. And it was an impressive feat, and it flowed. Mm-hmm. Like the movie itself flows really well. Like I was watching it again today, and there's not a lot of, like we said in The Crow episode, there's not a lot of wasted motion.
It's kind
of
like
everything moves to the next scene and it makes sense within the story.
If anything, that's what the studio wanted.
Yeah.
Saban and 20th Century Fox, they wanted it to be almost like an action beat every 10 minutes or so. We were, of course, if you grew up and were getting consciousness of your surroundings too, whether you were born in the mid to late 80s or in the early 90s, and you grew up, you were like us, two of the millions of children who love the show and were really big on it. So this movie was huge, and it's great because it's taking what you love about the Power Rangers and inflating it and giving it that big budget,
a nice sheen.
Exactly. And like ever since I was a kid, I could recognize there was something more grandiose with the Power Rangers, with this movie, even if it is essentially a 90-minute Power Rangers episode.
Well, that's as it should be with a big budget movie that's being adapted from a show, especially when the show is still on. Like you expect it to have a different feel, a different look. Like it's supposed to sort of stand on its own, take these characters that we know, these familiar, ideas, these characters, and you go in expecting a new threat, higher stakes. Maybe, in this case, we're introduced to like new weapons early on. So you're like, oh, that's like, I've never seen, Billy use that or Kim use that in the show. It's kind of, they're, You want them to pull out all the stops and make things look different and cool.
You want there to be like new features on the costumes.
Yeah.
And you want there to be, like you said, new weapons, and they get new Zords. You want there to be some, because like it's almost like I compare it kind of to like the blow off of a feud at WrestleMania. Like you have, a rubber match or a feud comes to a head at WrestleMania, and like, as I say it, it's not really a great comparison, but like, what's the point in like putting all this money, forget my wrestling comparison. What's the point in putting all this money into something if you're not going to introduce something new?
Right.
Or, and the thing is, if you introduce something new, are you going to carry it over to the TV show, which they did kind of.
Sort of, in some
ways, and we'll get into that. But first, like we have with all the other Radcast rentals, I'm going to do some kind of logistical things.
Yeah, yeah.
So Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie, it released June 30th, 1995. So in just another month, 2 months, just about, we're going to be hitting the 25th anniversary. And it opened the same weekend as Judge Dredd. So some stiff competition.
Man. Kids were conflicted as to which movie to go to.
And it's funny because they actually have kind of a correlation with one another, and we'll kind of get into that. I'll get into it right now. So it's not like something that'll rabbit trail us from the details here. But so in Judge Dredd, for those of you unfamiliar with the 2000 AD British comic, Judge Dredd's code of ethics prevents him from removing his helmet. That's his whole thing. Judge Dredd's badass. Go look up Judge Dredd. But with Sylvester Stallone and this iteration of Judge Dredd, I've never seen the Carl Urban one. I really, really want to, because I hear
it's great.
It's really awesome. Yeah. But the first screen adaptation of it was Sylvester Stallone, Armand Assante,
Rob Schneider,
Diane Lane, Diane Dane,
Dennis Leary.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Dennis Leary's in it. But Sylvester Stallone had in his contract he doesn't want his face covered, so he barely is wearing the helmet in the movie, which is Judge Dredd's thing.
Yeah,
like he that's Judge Dredd. He's a helmet on 24/7.
Right.
So the reason that it kind of,
especially during lovemaking.
Yeah. Well, we don't see that. You want to see Sylvester Stallone make love with his female counterpart with a piece of technology on.
Watch Demolition Man. Exactly.
Anyway, so the reason kind of this relates to that is so Brian Spicer was the director and
of Power Rangers.
Of Power Rangers, yeah. Yes. And he actually wasn't the first director that was hired.
Mm-hmm.
The first director got shit canned.
Yeah.
And Brian Spicer.
Sorry.
Yeah.
You lose.
Yeah, exactly. Brian Spicer. He was a cameraman. So actually, if you watch the movie,
me,
yeah, well,
yeah, you come here,
you boy,
me, sir.
Yeah, so this was his first movie, and he had never seen the show before.
Uh-huh.
So the story goes, he spent a week, every episode. There was close to 100 episodes before the movie.
Yeah,
and the story goes, he fast forwarded through every episode just to get the gist of the.
I think got the basics down.
Okay, I think got the basics down. But one of the things he wanted to do was get rid of the visors on the helmets. Mm-hmm. So they tried so many different ways, either like the visors being retractable or anything like that.
So you could see them emote.
So you could see them emote. And it just reminds me of what they tried to do with Judge Dredd. Yeah. So eventually they shot some scenes like that. And it was apparently, according to the stunt people, because it's the, unless, you know, they have their helmets off, it's stunt people in the costumes. Yeah. Surprise.
Sorry. And even in the show, it's Japanese footage, so it's not even the actors fighting a lot of the time.
The stunt coordinator said the actors just looked really wooden and they just looked really awkward and moving and everything. And they're like, this is not working out.
Yeah.
So they got rid of all those scenes and kept the visors on because they're like, they're not supposed to emote. There's a super powerful fighting force. They're not supposed to see them emote.
Right. And even when they do emote, it's like over exaggerated hand gestures.
Exactly. Exactly. So those were kind of, I thought it was funny. They opened against each other and they kind of had that same
deal. So a limited understanding of the source material.
Right. So it had like a $25 million budget, which of course is more than a television show. And even though a lot of people saw it as a disappointment or a box office bomb, if you will, I don't think it bombed. It made $66.5 million.
Its budget was, did you say what the budget was?
Yeah, like $25
million. Yeah, and it made like $66
million. Yeah, so
granted, a lot of that was on the coattails of the phenomenon.
Oh, my God. Like, and it will really, like, in just a second here, we'll get into, like, some behind-the-scenes stuff on the making of the movie. But, like, even if the movie was shit, if it makes it such a huge profit like that, I don't know, the numbers don't lie in some cases, that whether or not the movie was any quality, it made a profit, so it's a success.
Yeah, and when I was watching it again, so we watched it last night
for the first time.
First time in years.
I think it had at least been since high school.
Yeah, and we had watched it a lot as kids. Obviously, we were obsessed with the Power Rangers. But we watched it last night, and I watched it again today. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, for someone with limited understanding of the source material who just fast forwarded the entire series up into that point, he doesn't do a bad job like capturing the feel and the essence of the Power Rangers. Like we're joking, like the Steve Brule quote, I think got the basics down. Yeah. Like he had the basics essentially of like the characters, and it helps that with a movie you're kind of trying to establish your own story.
And it's not like with a comic book, because each episode, except for maybe there was a few two or three parters story arc wise from the Power Rangers, it's all self-contained.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like a comic book to where you have these big overarching stories inside the comics.
You have to pay attention to continuity.
Yeah, exactly. Like essentially all you, if you're not familiar with them and you kind of know some of the basics, you can kind of like not BS, but you can kind of like get your way through a film. Like say about the Power Rangers, if you know about, okay, there's They're karate fighters.
Yeah.
They're teenagers with attitude.
Karate fighters is different from Power Rangers.
Sorry. They're martial artists.
Yes.
Yes. They're teenagers with attitude. They have these. They each have their own respective personalities and colors and weapons and zords. Get their orders from a big disembodied head named Zordon.
Yeah, exactly.
You have Lord Zedd and Rita and Goldar.
Yeah.
And there you have Bulk and Skull. You have the general idea.
And it's just the characters themselves, like Lord Zedd and Rita and Goldar, mm-hmm. up to that point, he understood the dynamic of those three.
Yeah.
I mean, they added, rather than having Babu and Squat, they had some... Pig.
Yeah. Oh, I think it also, I mean, the actors know these characters too.
Yeah.
I'd say the only actors, and I'll get into it now. First and foremost, all the Rangers are back except Jason David Frank is back as Tommy Oliver, the White Ranger. Mm-hmm. Amy Jo Johnson is back as Kimberly Hart, the Pink Ranger.
David
Yost is back as Billy, the Blue Ranger. But there's a glaring omission. And it's the Red, Yellow, and Black Rangers. So the originals are Austin St. John, the Red Ranger, the original leader.
Yeah.
Toy Trang.
Trini,
the Yellow Ranger. And then Walter Jones is Zach, the Black Ranger. And if you see the movie as a kid, you're already used to the new Red Ranger, which is Rocky, played by Stephen Cardenas.
Johnny Young Bosch is Adam,
the Black Ranger, and then Aisha is
Karen Ashley,
the Yellow Ranger. When you're watching the movie as a kid, you're like, oh, you know, you're already kind of used to these characters.
Yeah.
But they actually, those parts, the colors were recast in response to the movie.
Yeah.
So the original Red, Black, and Yellow Rangers were supposed to star in the movie along with everyone else. But they wanted to renegotiate their contracts because, quite frankly, everyone got treated pretty shitty.
Yeah.
A lot of the actors got the shaft. Yeah, they had to do their own stunts for the most part. It was dangerous work environments.
They were filming nonstop.
So to do a weekly, I mean... Again, when we do we're going to do a Power Ranger something, Matt and I, and we'll get into kind of the details on how they would do the English dubs and kind of incorporate the Japanese footage in the English. It's a really kind of painstaking process, and they were doing that episode after episode after episode, long work days, doing their own stunts, dangerous environments, getting paid essentially $600 a week, which for actors, I mean... It's nothing compared to what they had to do. And not to mention, they got zero cut of the royalties.
Mm-hmm.
That was all Saban. So that's...
They would have made bank if they got a cut of the royalties.
Yeah, exactly. And you would... I mean, they'd be living a lot better. Some of them, like, are doing fine.
Yeah, they all ended up fine. Well, yeah. Tui Trang got more acting gigs, but she unfortunately passed away. Yeah.
And they all make appearances on the convention circuits because they're still... There's clamoring and there's demand for Power Rangers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it just sucks because they all got treated really poorly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Austin St. John and Tui Trang and Walter Jones wanted to renegotiate their contracts to get some sort of, you know, incentivized for something for the work they put in, and
especially
Saban,
if they're about to start filming this movie.
Exactly. And Saban wouldn't budge, so they opted out and they cast, you know, Rocky, Aisha, and Adam.
Yeah.
And again, I mentioned that if you see the movie, you would already be familiar with them.
Yeah.
Because
so when you say so, yeah, when we read that bit of trivia, we're like, they were cast for the movie. In our heads, we're like, no.
Well, nine,
like they're like we because. When you read that, you're like, oh, they cast them, like they were making the movie and they cast them for the movie, mm-hmm. and this is their first exposure.
Right.
But they were filming the movie while they were filming the show. Yeah.
So they started filming in July 1994, and the Adam, Aisha, and Rocky characters showed up in November 1994. And of course, all of this is before the movie.
Yeah.
But behind the scenes. So if, again, if you're a kid, you're seeing it, oh, I already know.
Yeah, they'd already been on like 24 episodes. Yeah.
Like Matt just said, that's why we were confused. And then I watched kind of a behind the scenes thing yesterday because I kept reading that fact. And I was like, no. Like, what are you talking about? Yeah. What's the timeline? And then Jason Narvi, who plays Skull, he mentioned, or no. It was Brian Spicer mentioned that they recast because they started filming in July 94, and I was like, oh, that's right. You start filming a movie
sometimes a year before it comes out.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like, I'm the dummy.
Oh.
So this morning I mentioned that to Matt, and he's like, oh, that makes sense.
Way more sense.
So they were brought in because of the movie, but you already familiarized with them because they already showed up on the show prior to the movie coming out.
And this is like, they are part of the Ranger lore just as much as the originals.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be a really nerdy diatribe right now. But, and I like Adam, Rocky, and Aisha.
They're great. They're the ones who we actually knew a little better before we swatched more and more Jason, Zach, and Trini.
It was just like a shift in dynamic and sort of a shift in power to where it was like Jason was the Red Ranger was the leader. Jason was the leader. And then like Tommy and him kind of co-led. And then when Tommy became the White Ranger, I think Jason said, like, you're the leader now. Or Tommy was, like, made the leader or something.
There was still kind of confusion in the power balance.
Right. And so it sort of was a changing, like, a different era going into this motion picture. Because, you know, you understood their dynamic as a certain way going into this. Like, Tommy was unquestionably the leader, and everyone else was kind of following his lead while also working together. So the dynamic going into the motion picture was sort of this new era. Mm-hmm. And one thing that's always been a huge what if to me is, like, what if Jason, Zach, and Trini were in this movie? How would that dynamic look?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to see, because this movie has a major motion picture sheen on it.
Like we mentioned
before, like aesthetically, it looks different from the show, as it should, because it was the first Power Rangers anything that 100% of the footage was filmed, you know,
it was original.
With them original because they used Japanese footage for a lot of the fighting in the show.
The Super Sentai, like Zhu Ranger and Kaku Ranger.
And there's a noticeable difference because the Japanese footage is from the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
And you've got the American footage, which is from, you know, the mid 90s. Mm-hmm. And so, but anyway, like, it's like, I want to see those originals with that sheen. I wonder how that would look. Like, I wonder what the dynamic would be. You know, I've got, you know, I jotted down some notes when I was watching the movie today, and especially during the scene in which they're fighting on the construction site, I'm like, how would have Trini looked fighting? Like, what would she be wearing? What would Zach be wearing? What would Jason be wearing? How would this fight be different with those three?
Yeah. And that's why what ifs drive me nuts. Like,
because
sometimes, like a lot of people, I focus too much on the what ifs and you exert so much like mental energy, bring it up, and then you just are just working yourself up and just being disappointed because that's not how it was. And you just got to sit with, I still like Adam, I still like Aisha, I still like Rocky. Thing.
It was given, like, in years past, it would give me like this kind of this, like I would kind of be against those three.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, those aren't my Rangers or whatever. And then it just, I got to a point just like, hey, that's trivial and stupid to like get upset over, and be like,
yeah, they kind of are my Rangers.
Yeah, they were part of the team, because not ever, like, the original Rangers aren't always gonna be Rangers. They're gonna grow up, and the Power Rangers is a team that, like, over the years you get different Rangers that personify
what it is
to be a Power Ranger. So that was gonna happen anyway.
Yeah,
like, all your Rangers weren't always gonna be your Rangers,
right?
And like, it doesn't matter, because they were as much part of that series as the originals were. Mm-hmm. I think I get caught up in what ifs, and I'm like, I'm like putting, you know, the originals in certain scenes. Mm-hmm. Like I was saying, like, oh, this would have worked so well.
Yeah, it would have been cool. And I do the same thing. But I mean, it was what it was, and it is what it is. Mm-hmm. Joining the Rangers is Paul Freeman, plays the new villain, Ivan Ooze, who chews the mother effing scenery up.
Ivan Ooze is so great.
He is an amazing addition, mm-hmm. an awesome villain, so charismatic, so fun,
mm-hmm. like, while also being like super sinister.
Yeah, he's incredibly sinister, and he'll lead with like the, he'll lead with like the charming, joking around. He's the comedic, he's the comedic input. He's the sort of the, what's the term I'm looking for? Like the comedic,
the levity.
He's the levity in a lot of scenes, and he's the main, he's the main bad guy.
Yeah.
He's going to destroy the command center. Mm-hmm. You can't help but laugh at the stuff he's saying.
He's kind of cartoony.
Yeah, exactly. But then when he gets pissed off, you're like, oh,
yeah,
that's why you don't mess with him.
Yeah.
And what's funny is how frightening he can look. Like he's genuinely, you can tell Paul Freeman is having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Which really helps with this kind of stuff, because you grow to love movies when you're a kid,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of takes the wind out of your sails when you get older and you realize that the actors had just didn't like it.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun to watch him, because his over the top, you know, theatrics aren't, to me, they're not cheesy and they're not cringy and they're not corny. Like you totally believe he's this villain who, like we said, is menacing and is a threat, but you can tell he has fun. Man, I love being a bad guy. To the quote, God, what's his name?
Three Ninjas.
It doesn't matter. We're not talking about Three Ninjas.
Yeah, now that I'm on the spot.
God, I love being a bad guy.
He's great too.
That's going to get...
We talked about that.
I would love to revisit it, kind of going off topic here. I'd love to revisit it because it had been years since we watched it before we talked about it with Tyler Strickland.
Yep.
Which, go check out 90s ninja movies. It's our first, or it's our second and third episodes.
Yep.
You know, where we sit down with our first guest, our buddy Tyler Strickland. I'd like to revisit that and go a little more in depth, because we haven't watched it in a while.
Yeah.
You can tell he loves being a villain though. He's so amazing. I just had so much fun watching him chew up the scenery. Also is Gabrielle Fitzpatrick as Dulcia. She's really good
on the planet.
Phaedos.
I was like, I need to remember it. Because it's like spelled a weird way.
But a PH for the F.
Yeah.
PH for the F, baby. And then Jason Narvi and Paul Schreier are Bulk and Skull, respectively.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Narvi being Skull and Paul Schreier being Bulk.
Bulkmeyer and Skullovich.
Yeah. Which they're always great.
Yeah.
Like they're always really, really good. But a little bit of trivia. Mariska Hargitay was Dulcia for a little bit because Gabrielle Fitzpatrick
had an ovarian cyst.
Yeah.
And she had to go get that taken care of. And in the meantime, they recast it as Mariska Hargitay from Law and Order SVU.
Also from the loins of
Mickey Hargitay
and Jane Mansfield.
Jane Mansfield, yeah, exactly.
In the documentary I watched yesterday, maybe it's because they wanted to avoid any negativity.
Yeah.
Brian Spicer said Mariska Hargitay was the original casting, and I was like, well, they also didn't talk about some of the negative stuff that was experienced on the set. So probably it was done for the DVD release of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, which Saban was releasing, and you know they don't want dirt pieces, so they probably wanted to avoid the fact that she had an ovarian cyst.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mariska Hargitay was in that role for a little bit.
Yeah.
But what other? So you mentioned 100% new material. It's the first time you see blood in a Power Rangers feature.
Yeah.
It's very brief.
I caught it today. It's when they're finally in front of the monolith and Tommy's fighting like that rock guard. Temple.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't at the ninja. It was at the monolith that had the great power.
Mm.
The Ninjetti temple, they had to go from there.
Yeah,
to
that's
the
where the Ninjetti ruins. So let's run over the plot real quick.
Yeah.
For those of you listening, you probably know already, but essentially
this big baddie Ivan Ooze has been locked away for like 6,000 years in this big purple egg because he was defeated by another bunch of like intergalactic teenagers, mm-hmm. which Zordon was a part of and Dulcea yeah. was a part of
yep.
years and, you know, centuries and centuries ago. But he's back and he's found on like a construction site. They find him like on a construction site or whatever. And essentially Zordon tells the Rangers of the threat that
yeah.
Ivan Ooze is back, but then Zed and Rita Repulsa from the show show up and want to free him and pretty much put him under Zed's command. But Ivan Ooze is different,
yeah,
you know, has something different, and he like says, no, I'm going on my own. I want to defeat Zordon.
Yeah.
And the Power Rangers show up and there's a big fight that goes on between Ooze's putties.
We'll get into that. Yeah. You know, high level the rest yeah. of the plot.
But yeah. essentially, you know, Ooze, you know, he leaves the Power Rangers to fight his putty, the analogs for the putties, and he goes off
he destroys
and
he destroys the
command center and Zordon.
Destroys their power.
Yeah, so the powers are gone, and they go to the planet
Zordon's
Phaedos.
Zordon's dying.
Yeah, Zordon's dying, and he tells them about the planet Fate or Alfalfa.
Doing.
Jesus Christ. Alpha Phi.
Alfalfa 5.
Alpha 5. God almighty. Alfalfa. Fuck.
Alfalfa. God damn it.
I know.
Yeah,
I'm not a newbie here. Alpha 5. Alpha gets attacked as well. He gets put in this stasis by Ivan Ooze. But when the Rangers return to the command center and see the state of it, and they see Zordon's dying, Alpha sends them to the planet Phaedos because he tells them about
this great power.
And they come to find out, you know, there's this planet dweller by the name of Dulcea, who also was a part of the team that defeated Ivan Ooze. And she's this great warrior, Amazon warrior. And she tells them about the power of the Ninjetti, which is more powerful than the Mighty Morphin power that they've had. And she essentially, like, sets them up with the power of the Ninjetti or tells them about it. And then they have to go, like Matt said, this monolith to where they can hone the power.
Yeah.
And then they get their new ninja gear, and then they get their new
new ninja gear
their new ninja power, and they get this power and they go back to Angel Grove, and they're
the Power Rangers again.
They're the Power Rangers again.
They have this new great power,
yeah,
which I have a bit of a
we'll get
a qualm
to, yeah,
with.
But essentially Ivan Ooze, he was back because he wants to take over the world, and he needs these two big colossals, his own big
Ectomorphicon Titans,
his yeah. colossal zords. And Power Rangers come back. They call on their new ninja powers, and they're yeah. taking on Ivan Ooze. And there's the big battle, the big zord battle that, you know, we see in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually they take also Ivan Ooze is taking control of Angel Grove.
I'll get into that.
Yeah,
the parents
of Angel Grove. So while that's going on, I don't know, it's the whole big hoopla, the big battle or whatever. Yeah.
Power Ranger robots fighting
big
robots.
They take Ivan Ooze out into space where Ryan's Comet, which is established
at the beginning
something.
Of the movie.
Yeah. Ryan's Comet is on its way over through Angel Grove, and they push Ivan Ooze into Riven's Comet.
Yeah.
And he explodes, and they come down, and there's big fireworks. This Van Halen playing. And essentially, if you're listening to this, you already know the movie, but that's just for
one
just
thing,
covering bases.
One small thing you left out as you started to acknowledge was Ivan Ooze, once he's on Earth, realizes he needs to dig up these Ectomorphicon Titans, but mm-hmm. he needs a team to help, you know, dig it up. And
right.
so basically, through his Ooze, He sells this ooze free of charge to all the kids.
Free of charge.
To all the kids
Looks
in
like
Angel
Gak.
Grove. Yeah, exactly.
Looks
they
like
take it home.
Gak.
And all the parents of the kids are basically taken under Ivan Ooze's control because they mess with like the ooze or
right.
whatever. Basically gets these parents to dig it up. And then his end game is, all right, I'm done with you. Go, you know, jump off.
Yeah.
You know, go. Basically a mass suicide.
Yeah.
Like go jump off the edge
of the construction site.
Yeah.
Which... The construction site is
the site of the best scene in the movie.
Yeah, and it's a site of a lot of kind of the pivot points in the movie.
Yeah.
Or some of the pivot points in the movie.
Sure, it's where they find the egg.
It's where you see them morph for the first time in
it's
the movie.
True.
So like Matt said, the soundtrack is phenomenal, and we get
first and foremost, we get a little hint at the soundtrack. Higher Ground, the Red Hot Chili Peppers cover of Stevie Wonder's Higher Ground plays as they're doing a charity skydiving event.
Yeah,
it's like, why can't you just do like a pie eating contest?
Can you imagine, like, you're a huge Power Rangers fan and you're going to this movie and you're so psyched for it, and no, you've got Dulcia's introduction at the beginning. Hello, everyone. This is the Power Rangers movie.
It may.
Are you all being quiet?
So it's like for the intro of the original Frankenstein. Yeah.
It may shock you. But her intro, it's like the opening crawl to Star Wars.
Yeah, that
like,
is Dulcia. Yeah, she's given Kevin an overview of the story. Well, and when she's doing that, I was like, I know. I watched the show.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not the overview to the story. It's the overview to Power Rangers.
It's telling you what the Power Rangers are. It's like, I know.
Yeah,
I know what the Power Rangers
anyway,
are.
But anyway, you're a kid and you're sitting there and you're like amped, and after Dulcia's intro you see, you know, this plane come into frame, and the first thing you see is Rocky turning, like, all right, let's go. Can you imagine being a kid? You're like, here we go,
it's
baby.
The Power Rangers.
Oh, this is gonna be awesome. And there's so many moments in that movie to where I'm like putting myself in the shoes of a huge Power Rangers fan, seeing this in theaters, you're like, this is awesome.
Because like watching it yesterday, like it had been years, I kind of got goosebumps because I was like, you know, just kind of like you said, being a lifelong fan, but also just putting yourself in the shoes of like a 9-year old.
Yeah. There's something about seeing the thing you love that's, you know, a certain way as you see it on a certain scale, seeing it on a grander scale. Where the stakes are higher, and you see it in a different light.
Right.
And it leaves you walking away. You're like, man, I don't want to let that go.
Yeah. Plus the two scenes that go back to back, you have Higher Ground and then Free Ride.
Yeah. And they're all rollerblading through the park.
So that scene when they're all rollerblading through the park, I love it. And then also the construction site scene to where Ivan Ooze meets the teenagers for the first time. And he's sicking, instead of the putties, he's sicking his Ivan Ooze
monsters,
which
are still terrifying.
Still really, really freaky.
Yeah.
But he's sicking them on the Power Rangers. And before they morph to Devo's Are You Ready, they have
the most
badass fight scene to it. Like, there are better fight scenes, but it's badass to a little kid.
Yeah.
I can't tell how many times I wanted to reenact that scene and the scene where they're rollerblading.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was just so awesome.
During the during the construction fight, the construction site fight.
Yeah.
I was like, I wonder like what Trini, Zach, and Jason, like what moves they would have done. I could have seen Zach in between two monsters and like doing like hip hop keto and doing like a split while they come there. And I could have seen like Jason like strong arming a couple.
Oh yeah.
Cause Rocky's a more like swift and like graceful Red Ranger. And Jason was too.
Yeah.
But he was like power. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Trini, I feel like would have done a lot of the stuff that Aisha did anyway.
Yeah.
So, but you know, that was one of those things that I thought about, and I kind of wanted to ask you like, what sort of differences do you think you would have seen?
I actually wasn't so much thinking of the differences. I was more so just still in the moment of what was going on. But I mean, I think they would have thrown in a suplex from a Greco-Roman wrestling move from Jason just because he is more powerful.
And I think at that point, their dynamic still would have been as such to where they were kind of co-leaders.
Yeah.
So I think
like a back-to-back shot with Tommy and Jason would have been cool.
Well, when they first show up and they all jump down to the pit, and Tommy's like, hold on, guys, I'll be right there. And he's kind of fighting a few off before he jumps in the pit. I feel like there would have been Tommy and Jason doing that. And then you get the classic Power Rangers overhead shot of them like,
both flip down into kind of the lower pit of the construction site.
Yeah.
And something about every fight scene in this movie, you have the Power Ranger one-liners.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, in this...
And it's corny, and it's cheesy.
It's corny, and it's one of the things where when some of the stuff, I'm just like, okay, you don't have to say anything. You can just fight.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that's something that Brian Spicer took away from the show, is you have the one-liners during the fight.
You ever play Kick the Can?
Exactly. You ever play Kiss and Make Up?
Yeah.
Have a nice trip.
See you next fall. Bye-bye.
Yeah. God, I love it. It's just, I mean, If you're a Power Rangers fan, that's just...
But that's an earmark of the Power Rangers.
That's the Power Rangers. Yeah, it's, like, they're making these comments.
That's, you lose, you lose.
That's the difference. And granted, the Power Rangers movie from 2017,
yeah,
it was sort of is a reboot. So it's not coming off of the heels of a TV show, right, to where you know what the identity is. But you sort of by proxy, not by proxy, but by default, mm-hmm, you know what the identity is. So I think... Even though they took it a bit more seriously, mm-hmm, and I enjoyed that movie,
yeah,
I think I like the 95 movie, yeah, way better because it captures the spirit of the Power Rangers.
It's coming
better
off of what was already really well established, right, and what was white hot. That's the thing. This movie was rushed into production because 20th Century Fox and, yeah, Saban, they're like, we can make a movie. And they're like, go do it.
Yeah.
And like, instead of like kind of taking their time, and kind of letting things breathe and like getting something of quality, they just kind of rush things, and you know, it caused a lot of problems behind, yeah, the scenes.
Yeah.
And again, they started running into their filming schedule with the show, so a lot of things were falling behind, and like, and it's just,
oh yeah,
a lot of negative things, but we'll try and just stay on the positive.
Sure. Like, I think on a positive note, even if it's rushed, it still feels like the Power Rangers.
It still feels like the Power, yeah, Rangers. And I, with Brian Spicer's history just behind the camera, one of the things he said is he knew how to frame a shot to where, yeah, it was interesting each time.
Yeah, and there's a scene to where, like, sort of the memeable thing happens now. Like, currently there's the Power Rangers meme,
mm-hmm,
to where it's like, it sort of highlights the fact that as they're morphing, you never really think about the fact that the villain is just standing there.
Right.
And like, so when they finally do morph, mm-hmm, which in this movie
is
a new coat of paint, the suits look very armored.
Oh yeah.
Which was always a huge thing for me when, mm-hmm, when watching this movie as a kid, I was like, that just looks awesome. And I know, yeah, that's from the movie.
And that's a good thing to bring,
yeah,
to the table. Something new, something like, if you have the budget for it,
yeah,
like do it and create something that is, you know, a little like, it's cooler looking. It's something that, like you said, looks a little more like armor, like powerful.
Yeah. But they're getting cornered by the ooze monsters, and then they start to morph. And then after they've gone through their whole morphing thing, there's the ooze monsters are gone, and they're like, where'd they go?
Yeah.
And I was like, where do you think they went?
They ran off. You guys, yeah, took too long.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it, but they took too long.
But all that to say, they go to like a parking garage, mm-hmm, and they're looking for the ooze monsters, and that shot's just framed really well.
It's lit really well, too. It's, yeah, just, and that's just a cool fight scene. Graham Revell does the score, which, yeah, is funny.
This is our third Graham Revell
Radcast rental
yeah, of
the Crow,
this season alone.
Daredevil,
yeah,
and Power Rangers, which is funny because... So they fight and they take on Ivan's ooze monsters, but on Phaedos, when they're trying to get their Ninjetti power, when they first get there before Delcia shows up, they take on the Tengu warriors.
Yeah, created by Ivan Ooze.
Created by Ivan Ooze, which are these big Crow Raven characters. And Graham Revell does the score, and Ivan Ooze like is hawking a loogie, and then he spits out and he's trying to create these more powerful warriors. And as they're growing, as they're more like, as the Tengu warriors are coming more to life, it starts in with kind of this drum pattern.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this sounds a lot like Burn by The Cure. And I was, yeah, like, that would make sense. You know, that was a pretty prominent
in
the
Crow. Yeah.
And then as the Tengu warriors came about, it's Graham Revell has this dime store version of the Crow.
Yeah.
Burn, yeah, by The Cure. And I was like, that's Burn by The Cure.
Yeah.
That's like a dime store version. I like it, but it's, yeah, like, that's like,
I like it.
That's a secondhand, like, that's a second rate version of Burn by The Cure. And it's the Tengu warrior theme. Yeah. Cause they show up again, like at the construction site after they get defeated by Dulcea pretty much.
Yeah.
And it plays every time they show up. Yeah.
Tengu warriors were supposed to be like
a huge,
really
threat,
vicious.
Yeah.
And you were supposed to see that they'd overpower the Power Rangers, because,
yeah,
that's a natural progression of henchmen, essentially, yeah, because the ooze monsters to me should have been used the whole movie.
They're freaky,
because,
yeah,
they were freaky,
but they were the analogs to the putties, and the putties are disposable.
Yeah, exactly. So now if you're creating these other henchmen,
you want them to be more powerful. Yeah. And you had glimpses of that, but they just ended up being squawking, bumbling, just idiots for slapstick.
Just for the fact that the Rangers let them take them over. I mean, it's one of the,
it was supposed to be like a more vicious
fight. They're supposed
to
draw blood. Yeah. Like they're supposed to be like pecking at Billy and like cutting up on I almost said Zach, on Adam. Yeah. And like drawing, they're supposed to
scratch Kim's back and draw blood and stuff like that.
But 20th Century Fox and Saban, they didn't like
that. They got backlash from the violence on the show anyway.
Yeah. So they wanted to kind of like dodge that bullet. But yeah, the Tengu Warriors were supposed to be, you know, more of a threat, and they ended up just getting blown up. I think they showed up in the show, though.
They did, and they showed up in the show. They were created by Rito Revolto, so that skeleton character.
Yeah, Rita's brother. Yeah.
They showed up in the same episode that Ninjor, not
a big like robot, Dulcia, like a big robot,
a
character.
Big robot that sounds like Marvin the Martian.
Yeah. Hello, Rangers. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Please leave.
That's how they get their ninja powers, is from Ninjor
in the show.
Because he created the power coins. And basically, he's locked, based on the comics mythology, he's locked into the morphing grid and stuff like that.
The thing is, they don't really have, the continuity really isn't there.
And that's okay, because I thought about that too. I was like, okay, but like, if I'm a kid and I'm like, well, I thought they had ninja powers given to them by Dulcia. It's like, how come Ivan Ooze isn't? And I'm like, oh wait, Ivan Ooze died. And so in the ninja, you know, the ninjetti power was just means for them to get the great power. Yeah. And they have that again. So it's like that was tied up. So within the movie, there's a lot of loose ends tied up. So it doesn't, you don't really need to ask
and
questions.
Then their morphing calls changed from their animals to
White Ranger power.
Black Ranger power, Red Ranger. I was like, I didn't like that. This post movie, a lot of stuff didn't sit well with me as a kid.
Well, Rito, much like Ivan Ooze in the movie, Rito destroyed their dinosaurs and stuff. So
they're not going to say Tyrannosaurus. So it was,
And it would sound kind of frog,
bear,
and that makes sense. That's a pretty pivotal moment in the series, to where he throws them in a volcano.
That's different.
Okay.
He just destroys them.
That's before the Thunder Zords.
Before they get their Thunder Zords is when their stuff's thrown in the volcano.
So that stuff, as far as continuity goes, I don't really, you know, there's a lot of grace there and how it doesn't continue into the show, because it was all kind of resolved anyway in the movie. Yeah. I think it was one of those things that, in the show, they were like, we really like those elements.
Yeah, we'll take these aspects.
We'll adapt them our way and give them different origin, like our origins. But then there's Japanese footage of like the sacred ninjetti animals. Like Japanese footage, like the old, you know, Japanese footage. Like,
can you confirm that, or do you think they created the models for the show because of the movie, do you think?
No, but it's Japanese footage. Like old Japanese footage, like old Zord footage with the animals. So I don't know which one.
I was thinking about that.
That's confusing.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know. Again, when we do a Power Rangers, whatever we do, we'll do more research and get into it. But we'll kind of just keep going on the movie here. I mean, that fight is badass and I love it.
Yeah.
And then the final fight, it's cool. Like you said, it's the early renderings of CGI, so it looks bad. It doesn't hold up at all.
But you know what? At least it looks like of the time.
Yeah.
That's its excuse. Be like, it was 1995. Movies now that have bad CGI, there's no excuse.
Yeah. Plus, also, there was only two instances of CGI, really, and they were both in that scene. Everything else is practical. The bit when, before they approach the monolith, when they're on their way to like get their ninja powers, they have a fight with a big dinosaur, and that's practical. Yeah. That's a big model. And then also there's a lot of wire play.
Yeah.
So like the fights are a little hokey, like with the wire play.
It's the Power Rangers.
But, listen,
I'm not saying it to you,
but it's one of those things where, you know, I say these things, but also preface, it's the Power Rangers.
Yeah.
Like, so it looks kind of weird. And then Tommy like flipping into the end of frame, like at the center of everybody, it looks really, really dumb.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, okay, that defies all the laws of physics.
But if I'm a kid, that looks badass.
It doesn't, I don't even care. Yeah. They're still rewatching the fights. I'm like, I wanted to do that as a kid. I wanted to do that kick as a kid. I wanted to do that thing as a kid.
When he comes, he's like midair, like doing kind of like Liu Kang's dragon kick.
Yeah. The Liu Kang's dragon kick.
Even Liu Kang's dragon kick is like front.
Yeah, but it's but his side like kick.
Side kicks. Yeah.
But I still listen to Are You Ready by Devo and still pretend I'm going to fight with my friends and like
we're kicking you're fighting ass. With your friends.
Yeah, when we're like kicking ass and it's cool. I remember at the end of the movie, I'm sure we'll continue with the movie for just a second or two here, and then I want to kind of talk a little bit about kind of the marketing because I remember that. But I remember, what were you going
to
say?
Oh, I just wanted to touch on the actual distribution of the sacred Ninjetti animals.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, this is where we're introduced to, like, you know, Black Ranger becomes the frog, and
Blue is the wolf.
And like, I was sitting there, I was kind of riffing on it today. Mm-hmm. She's like, these sacred Ninjetti animals. Aisha, you are the bear. It's like, oh yeah, bear. We have these on Earth. Yes. We have a lot of them on Earth.
Yes. Like, are you saying that these are only like?
Do you have wolves?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Apes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Falcons.
Cranes.
A lot of them.
Yeah. So I was lied to. These aren't specific to the Ninjetti.
Nope. Sorry.
No, sorry, Bob.
Well, Ninjetti. But when she's like, Billy, wolf, cunning and swift. And I was like, why didn't you make him like a dorky
like
animal?
A caterpillar.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, a caterpillar. Reads a lot. It's like a beaver, good at math. But like, and is the classic line to where Adam's just like, Adam, what's wrong? He's like, I'm a frog. It's like, yes, but you give the frog a kiss, turns into a sweet prince, and then just moves on. It's like, wait a second.
What am I fighting?
Yeah.
How powerful am I?
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
still a frog. Yeah. Yes, I got some action from Dulcea, but
yeah, exactly.
I'm still a frog. What is good about a frog?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you gave everyone these inspirational adjectives, and my thing is, if you kiss me, I turn into a handsome prince.
Also, it would have worked with Zach because hip hop.
Yeah.
Hip hop keto, hello.
Hip hop frog. Hip hop frog.
Come on now.
But in the show, Ninjor explains the significance of the frog, which I can't remember, but it's one of those things in which, like, in the moment, if I'm Adam, I'm like, wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
But I did want to see, you know, one thing that was missing from Ninjor's explanation was kissing Adam. So,
well, yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
One thing we haven't mentioned yet is there's this little kid who has a boner for the Power Rangers named Fred.
Yeah, who's Australian, and his dad's Australian, but they have American accents because this was filmed in Australia. It's supposed to be Angel Grove. And of course, you know, I wasn't criticizing the fact that it should be in Australia.
Ugh, Australia, but gross.
Mainly I was making the point that you can hear their Australian accents kind of poke through.
Fred's a little better at covering his
name's Fred.
Yeah. Essentially when the parents they're still under Ivanhoe's spell, and he's recruited Bulk and Skull to help him. Bulk, Skull, and all these kids because the kids are partying because the parents are, they're like, we don't care where our parents are.
Yeah.
They all go to the construction site, and Fred starts, first of all, he tells the kids to keep them from going off the cliff, and they're trying to push them back, which isn't helping at all. And then Fred gets on this big hose and starts spraying them with water. And, I forget what Bulk and Skull are doing that whole time.
They are hanging out with the kids.
Well, yeah, they're,
which is weird.
That's weird. But like in the, where Fred's shooting the water on the parents,
I think they are helping him.
They're doing something.
Yeah.
Bulk and Skull are in there somewhere. But
Fred has this smug air about him that, like, when I was a kid, I would have hated him. Like, and even now, I'm kind of...
He thinks he's helping is the thing. He's not. Because
he's got, like, this air about him, like he's a Power Ranger. Like, when he's like, all right, yeah! Like, when he's hashing out plans, you're like, you think you're so cool, don't you?
But the thing I noticed, when I was a kid, I was like, oh, Fred's, like, bringing the he's bringing the parents back down to Earth or whatever. Or, like, he's helping the parents.
No.
No, it's,
He's just spraying them with water.
Yeah, I was like, yesterday, like, he's spraying them with water, and then it's when the Power Rangers defeat Ivan Ooze when they get let up.
That doesn't wake
spell.
The water doesn't wake them up.
I was like, the water didn't do anything.
A few more seconds, and not only would the parents have gone plummeting, but the kids trying to hold them back would have gone plummeting.
Exactly. Maybe you could make the argument when Fred, when they're all on the tram, and they're like, they are getting to the parents, but Fred doesn't do anything. The kids don't do anything. Bulk and Skull
don't do anything. Into the monorail, presses two buttons. Mm-hmm. He looks unsure of himself.
Yeah.
And it just starts going.
Yeah.
And then the bridge is out, and they're like, oh, no.
The bridge is out.
Oh, and then and then Tommy shows up in his Falcon Zord and like completes the bridge.
He's like, yeah.
We did it. It's
like, you didn't do anything.
You didn't.
We ain't found shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Fred's in there and Fred serves a purpose.
And I do, and he does. And at the, I have read a lot of kind of qualms people had with like Zeo and Turbo, and that Fred should have been the Gold Ranger. Mm-hmm. Fred should have been the Blue Ranger in Turbo. Because as you know, if you know anything about Turbo, you know that the Blue Ranger
is a kid.
And when he morphs, he grows into an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like by the time that movie came, the movie and the show came out, that kid,
Fred
would
have
been
a teenager.
Yeah.
And it would have made more sense.
But at the, that's, you know, nerdy qualms.
That's neither here nor there.
And speaking of nerdy qualms, there's this great power they have to go find, which if I'm a ranger, after the dust settles, I'm like, wait a second. How great was the power we had for like the past 2 years? Like, there's this great power. Hey, Zordon, why do we get like the second greatest power?
Because I forgot it was there, Rangers.
Simple fact, you just forgot.
Yeah, exactly.
But oh well.
Small, it's a small nitpick to be like, wait a second. We could have had these all along.
It's a plot device to get to the second act.
And it is. And it's a plot device to bring Zordon back.
Yep.
And also, just because something is a great, just because, like, you're not entitled to it. Like, it's on this island and no one knows what it is. And
that's, you're not entitled to it.
Yeah.
You're entitled to what I, you be happy with what I gave you.
Yeah,
also,
exactly.
I mean, you have to create more of this peril, and you want to create something bigger for the movie. So just add a different planet. You go get this different power source from a different planet.
And ultimately, that's exactly what it is.
That's exactly what it is.
I was just riffing on it today, and I was like, wait a second.
You can nitpick it all you want, but like we said at the beginning, it's a 90-minute Power Rangers episode with a bigger budget, and we love the Power Rangers. So by default, we love this movie.
Oh, for sure. It's super fun. It was super entertained. You have to go in knowing exactly what it is, and you'll get some enjoyment out of it.
Oh yeah, for sure. Real quick before we end, I definitely remember the marketing. I remember
the McDonald's
Power
toys,
Rangers toys. I remember the toys themselves. I remember
the preview before the Pagemaster.
We watched the Pagemaster so much growing up because they had this like 10-minute preview of the Power Rangers movie. And it had Combat by Ron Wasserman in there.
And Ron Wasserman does the Power Rangers theme.
Yeah.
And he does all the music in the show, like, go Green Ranger. You know, that stuff.
But which he didn't really receive a dime for either. That was all Saban pocketing that money.
He also did the X-Men animated theme.
Yeah. It was great. But there's that. We had these Jell-O mold, Ivan Ooze Jell-O molds.
Yep.
We had... Until just a few years ago, we had a pillowcase, which on one side was the Rangers, all kind of, you know, Tommy at the top, and then Kimberly and
them as the Rangers.
And then on the back was them as the ninjas.
Yeah.
And that was really, really cool. We each had one of those. And then again, the soundtrack, the song Trouble by Shampoo.
Yeah.
Higher Ground. Dreams by Van Halen, which I remember even as a kid. On the So Baby Dry Your Eyes, like that part. I remember as a kid having like that affected me emotionally.
Yeah, it's like because my superheroes just saved the world.
Yeah, and then the Thank You Power Rangers. I remember like
it's that connection of like how well music is used and how it can enhance a scene.
Yeah, it's one of the first instances in my life to where that I noticed that connection. But like on that part, especially like, I loved the song. I didn't even know what it was as a kid, but that's a song for Power Rangers. But then on the you know, so baby, dry your eyes part. Yeah. Like, I remember, like, as a kid, not like crying or welling
dry
up,
your
but
eyes,
like,
Steven.
But like getting emotional, yeah, and like not wanting the movie to end.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know, there's a difference between watching it and dreaming about it and then trying to act out your dreams on it. It's not the same.
Mm.
But yeah, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie.
Happy, like, 25th birthday.
Happy 25th.
Next
also,
month.
Real quick, do you remember the profile helmet? Like,
yeah.
The helmets staggered
absolutely
on one another. I remember it in preschool with Legos.
Yeah.
I tried to make that because I was so obsessed with Power Rangers.
Well, and that is actually the case to our DVD copy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that, if it were, I mean, I was a kid back then, but that movie poster is really where you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
This is going to be different.
Yeah.
Because, like, you do have the movie poster where it's all of them and the letters are silver and they're all kind of positioned.
All, like, staggered off of one another. You got Tommy right up front.
Yeah, but then you're like, for whatever reason, the one with the overlapping helmets, the for whatever reason, you look at that and you're like, shit's going to go down.
Like, that's a Power Rangers movie right there. But
yep.
I'm sure there are things we're forgetting, but it's one of those things where, again, we're going to revisit the Power Rangers with
something
that we do, because that's a tentpole for us, and it had such a profound effect on us, and it opened our world to superheroes. Batman followed soon after Batman, the X-Men and Spider-Man soon followed after, but the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie is, no matter how you slice it, no matter what Rotten Tomatoes gives it or what the viewers say, you know, whatever critics have said, whatever people think the general consensus on it, we at the Radcast love the Power Rangers. Two thumbs way up your butt. Two thumbs in the ooze making the fart noise. Yep, exactly. So that was the Radcast Rentals for this week. Like always,
be kind, rewind, and we'll see you next time.
This concludes our broadcast day.